T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
All right, listen to this. This is cool. Frank Luntz, you remember him? He's a Republican pollster and political consultant, and he does focus groups on TV where he talks to normal citizens about how they're going to vote. Listen to what he has to say about what the Attorney General in New York is doing to Donald Trump.
I want you to remember this moment, and don't forget it. If the New York Attorney General starts to take his homes away, starts to seize his assets, it's all going to be on camera. Pundits are going to sit there and scream about this. This man cannot be elected. You're going to create the greatest victimhood of 2024, and you're going to elect Donald Trump. If they take his stuff, he's going to say that this is proof that the federal government and the establishment and the swamp in Washington and all the politicians across the country and the attorneys generals and all of this, that this is a conspiracy to deny him the presidency. He's going to go up in the polls just like he went up every single time they indicted him.
True or false? What do you think? Sounds pretty true to me.
The indictment, let's not talk about whether it's justified or not, but it will prove the things that he's saying on the campaign trail.
That's the concern that Frank Luntz has, and he's spreading the fear. 860-522-9842, BPS Lawyers Traffic Center checking in once again with Mark Cristoforo, the wealthy guy with the no heat.
Well, I do have a Powerball ticket for tonight. So,
well, that's pretty hot.
Maybe my luck will change. You never know.
Well, maybe you'll only win a couple million.
You know what? $2.5 million at 5% in a conservative investment. That's $250,000 a year. That would work just fine for me. That's all I need. $5 million and I'm set.
It's Todd Feinberg. It's Todd Feinberg. Monday through Friday, 3 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
It's WTIC. Listen to one more clip of Frank Luntz, the political consultant.
The indictment, let's not talk about whether it's justified or not, but it will prove the things that he's saying on the campaign trail, and he will go up, and it may just elect him president. Do not forget that. And I say this to the Attorney General right now. If you play politics on this, this is what the Secretaries of State did in Colorado, and what they did in, I believe, was Maine. His numbers went up in both states. I don't understand. I'm almost speechless in how pathetic the opposition to Trump has been and how completely misguided. And this is a perfect example of it.
What do you think about that?
It is an amazing thing, isn't it? When you just think about it, they've been chasing Trump for 9 years. And they've thrown the full power of the United States government at him. I mean, don't forget, he declared war on the spy agencies and the deep state and the Democrats and the media, a lot of different organs of the state. And somehow he keeps surviving. They can't mobilize very effectively. I don't know what's going on with that, but it's true. Joining us now, Juan Pablo Villasmil. He is one of those young voices, youngvoices.org, who joins us on a regular basis. Juan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Did you get that newsletter out?
Yes, I did.
Good. I know you've been busy. So what are you following? What are you excited about?
Today I wrote a piece for the DC Diary with the Spectator World, which should basically dive into what's happening in the Capitol. And I wrote a bit about Rhonda McDaniel and her trouble.
The former head of the Republican National Committee. And there was controversy about her over the weekend because she signed a deal with NBC News to be a regular, to make regular appearances there. And at the same time, she had booked an interview with the, which show is it? This Week? No, Meet the Press.
And, Meet the Press, yeah.
And she was on Meet the Press doing an interview, which was booked before she became an employee of NBC. It's kind of a weird thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really weird because what's funny is that she was hired by NBC, and she's being paid something like $300,000 per year. It's a lot, of course. And right after she got the job, everyone at NBC got really angry. So Chuck Todd, Ed Morning Joe, the team at Meet the Press, everyone started attacking them. And then even some former employees like Mehdi Hasan, who used to work for MSNBC too, they all started to call for her firing.
And MSNBC said they wouldn't have her on, right?
Yeah, even the president of MSNBC said that she's not going to be on any of the on the show. So now I'm left wondering what's going to happen. Like, are they going to...
But it's an odd bit of management, don't you? They're like caused a mutiny with this hiring of Rhonda McDaniel.
Yeah, they did. And it's, you know, I kind of feel bad. Like, aside from like the politics of it all, now she's hated by the right and hated by the left because she committed a sin in like, you know, conservative politics, which is go to work for MSNBC. Like, that's the first thing you should never do. But then she gets to MSNBC and she's not welcome with open arms. They don't want her either. So what is she supposed to do now?
But it wouldn't be so bad for her if she has a no cut clause and she gets the $300,000 and she doesn't get to go on TV. That could be good too.
Well, yeah, that would be. But I don't know if that's going to happen.
She could just sit in Starbucks and write stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me play a little Chuck Todd just to create the mood on this, okay? Here we go.
Let me deal with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. So I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. Mm. She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC when the RNC was paying for her.
But the thing I didn't get about this, Juan, is that everybody who goes on those shows is a power broker connected to some institution. What's so different about having a politician who's being paid by the network to do commentary? I mean, isn't she under the same kind of leverage everybody is?
Well, the big thing that some of the more outspoken commentators on the NBC network are using against her is being on Trump's side when it comes to the 2020 election and saying out loud that it was rigged and making all these public comments that in the eyes of those hosts should absolutely
disqualify,
push her away from mainstream media.
So still they... Like, it's just a weird dynamic. Chris Christie was with ABC for a couple of years, and then he, you know, and I knew he was going to run for president, and he was just doing it to keep his profile high until he declared his candidacy, and then he left. And it seems that this is sort of routine. So I was listening to Chuck Todd rant like that, and I just couldn't figure out what his angle was. He was sticking up. For some reason, he's very protective of, what's her name, his successor as host of Meet the Press, and Kristen Welker. And I, I was wondering if it was just for that reason, because I don't see that they have a problem being hypocrites. Like, everybody's a hypocrite in that business, aren't they?
Yeah, like, everyone's a hypocrite. And the thing is that it's just about, you know, I guess maybe for Chuck Todd is really an ideological thing. I know that he has personally always been a firm liberal. I think that his wife actually, she works for Planned Parenthood. So maybe it's just a thing for him about, like, we don't want this conservative woman here and we will use any mechanism to not have her here.
Oh, like he's one of the people who's mad that she got hired just because he doesn't want her having a voice.
Yeah, so I think they are using these, you know, sophisticated dialogue. It's about democracy. It's about morals. It's about having someone with integrity. But I think it's pretty much just, you know, she's a conservative and she could become an influential voice in the network.
So what's your assessment of Ronna McDaniel? I don't really pay that much attention to the RNC because it just seems like a useless organization to me that's a fundraising device for helping whoever controls the Republican Party on a, you know, on an electoral basis. So was she somebody who was off the plantation in terms of conservative policy?
So as the RNC chairwoman, her job was to win, to deliver when it comes to elections. And, you know, when she was presiding over that chair, we didn't do really well. Conservatives in this country didn't do really well, Republicans. So if we judge her by that, then it's safe to say she didn't do the best of jobs. But again, she was put in a difficult position in the middle of the war between the Trump faction of the Republican Party and the more establishment one. And what's really interesting is that we saw her this last year go through this MAGA makeover, where she would try to align herself in the most, you know, after the primaries at least, the most vocal and outlandish ways possible with Trump. But not
yeah,
even
she was
that,
trying to win him over, right?
Yeah, so she, you know, she started, like, very publicly siding with Trump and very publicly, like, even before the primary was over, right? She said Trump's the nominee, which is something that she initially opposed. So I think that at the beginning of the primary, she was kind of hoping maybe that someone else won. But when Trump was the obvious winner, she was like, oh, no, like, the primary is over. Yeah, like, Trump's her nominee. So she saw the writing on the wall, as people say.
So as a young person looking at how she behaved as party chairman for the Republicans won, and the way, you know, the way people manipulate all these positions of power, does it inspire you the kind of integrity you see, or are you not surprised by that?
Well, when I look for integrity, I don't really look at the RNC or the DNC. A part of me understands that especially those organizations are not a place where you're going to find integrity. What you should find, though, is competence. Like, competency, like, people there should be able to mobilize toward a specific goal and use funds appropriately and deliver goals.
So they should be effective managers.
They should be really effective managers. And from the little that I know, Ron McDowell didn't seem like one. And I don't really know who the new guy is specifically. I haven't read his record. But that should be our focus. Because when you do look at how we spend our money, I think Democrats have been spending it better. But that's something that we would have to deep dive into another time.
But that could be part of the issue with that could be that Trump has built these alliances with people who he wants getting the nomination who reflect his particular philosophy, as opposed to just have an R next to their name and go for the person who's most electable, right?
Yeah, I think the argument can be made about the influence of Trump as the party head and the role of the RNC chairman or chairwoman declining. But I do think there's something more important to be said about how the money is spent generally. So when you look at, I remember I was looking at the midterms in 2020, And the way Democrats spend money and Republicans spend money was drastically different. It was like social media, TV ads, like this is a whole conversation to be had. But for example, with reaching the youth, which is something that I care about, Republicans didn't even try. Democrats outspent Republicans on platforms like Snapchat by more than 20. I don't remember the exact number, but it's something grotesque. And meanwhile, you see this in like many other specific campaigns where Republicans had a better shot than probably had a better shot than they actually end up having.
So you're thinking that Democrats are more connected maybe as a party just because of their demographics, say, that they understand social media better and the internet and are savvier about using those tools to market directly to voters. And it is a really powerful political tool, things like Facebook and the organizing you can do online and the inspiration of people and the marketing via email and text and all that stuff that they do now. It's really a new world. But it could be also just that the Republicans look at the demographics of who votes for Republicans and that those people aren't like maybe the managers of the Republican Party themselves aren't so prolific on social media.
Yeah. Again, this is like really like it's complex stuff. But what I would say is that when you look into it, the more it seems like Republicans actually outspend Democrats, and this is the broad picture. That's revealed when you look at the mm-hmm. documents. And I remember there was a lot of media coverage about this before Ron's departure from the RNC. Mm-hmm. But the amount of money that Republicans spend, for instance, on consultants, media consultants, it's obscene when compared to the DNC. The DNC spends much less on consultants.
So you think maybe it's kind of rigged money going to the institutional friends of those in power.
Yeah, so that's I don't have the proof in front of me, but it's definitely what it kind of seems like.
Well, there is a lot of that in politics, so you're probably right.
Yeah, it seems inappropriate, and it seems like we should be using new like money where it's needed, like in social media specifically. And this is something the Trump campaign did really well in 2016, is that they used a lot of their funds on social media. And what we've seen from the RNC has been, they try to stick with TV and traditional media consultants, I would say, often to the...
Not that many people watch broadcast TV anymore, so that would seem like a fairly constricted opportunity. Juan, nice to talk with you. We're out of time. Juan Pablo Villasmil from youngvoices.org. Give people your social media address again.
Yeah, my Twitter's real JP Villasmil, VILLASMIL.
All right. You are the real deal. Thank you, Juan.
All right. Thank you for having me. Have a good day.
We'll talk to you again next week. Stay tuned. We got good stuff coming your way. Right now, it's news. But first, Mark Christopher, BPS Lawyers Traffic Center. How's the ride going this afternoon?
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long.
Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
It was a bad weekend for Kristen Welker, the new host of Meet the Press. And this is a clip of her. She's interviewing Stephen Breyer, the retired Supreme Court justice. And it was just funny that she had to deal with this guy who was so pompous, I guess, is the best word. And intellectual and aloof and not a great interview. Listen to him.
Do you have a theory of the case? Do you think?
Oh, I'm sorry. She's asking him about the leak of the Roe v. Wade decision that got leaked before it was supposed to come out publicly. Remember that?
Do you have a theory of the case? Do you think that the leaker was someone who wanted to sound the alarm about Roe being overturned or wanted the draft opinion to be locked in place? Do you have your own theory?
Do I have my theories about it? Yes.
Yes, I have a theory, but I'm not going to tell you.
But you're not going to share them with me.
Correct.
Can you talk about it in that broader context, though? Do you have a sense of what the motive of the leaker was?
That's part of the theory.
And given, fair to say, how the fact that you're disappointed, you were not behind this in any way.
I'm not even going to say that. I mean, of course, I'd be amazed if it was a judge.
Okay.
There. I mean, why go on TV if you're not going to be a good conversationalist, if you don't have something to say? Well, he did have some things to say, I guess. He said a bunch of stuff. He said he supports a limit on age and you know, a term limit for judges. He said that Dobbs could be overturned. And what else did he say? He has his theories. Yes, you heard that. I guess that's it. But not very forthcoming. Not a loquacious guy. Very professorial. That's the best word. Or obnoxious. That wouldn't be a bad word either. 860-522-9842. Rant line number. We've got rants coming up in about 40 minutes or so, 45 minutes. 860-751-4698. The rant line always there for you to pop in and leave a comment, and we play those during the 5 o'clock hour. And at 5:40 today, maybe we'll have a visitor. Still negotiating, trying to get us somebody, but we'll see. And we've got a bunch of rants to play, so it's going to be a fun hour.
Never miss a moment. Go listen to the Todd Feinberg podcast on the Odyssey app.
860-522-9842. Joining us now, Chris Powell. ChrisPowellColumn.com. He writes great columns, which you can read whenever you feel like. And you just go to that website, ChrisPowell.com, and you get to partake. Oh, I love the new column for today, Chris. You go after a certain somebody who's big deal in Washington, who came from Connecticut, and
He deserves it, especially up here, Todd, because the issue in which he's now involved is not being covered in Connecticut at all. I mean, I'm talking about the federal education secretary, Miguel Cardona, who used to be Meriden school superintendent and briefly was state government's commissioner.
For about 20 minutes, he was the education commissioner.
But I think because of his Puerto Rican ancestry, he was deemed qualified in the Biden administration to be head of the Education Department. And there's a big scandal going on with the Education Department right now. At least you can find out about it outside of Connecticut. It's not being covered in Connecticut, I suspect, because the press does not want to embarrass Secretary Cardona. But Federal Education Department has botched the redrafting of the free application for federal student aid, which has really upended college admissions this year.
It's a crisis, right?
Throughout the country. The Washington Post, there was a quote from the Post I put in my column. It says the financial aid form debuted in December 2023, more than a year later than promised. It contains technical errors that make it impossible for some families to complete the education. Submissions are piling up at the Education Department, where officials are behind in processing applications, preventing colleges from issuing financial aid awards. A federal watchdog has launched two investigations, and lawmakers are furious. And that's the end of the quote from the Washington Post. But there's no coverage of it in Connecticut.
Is there any coverage nationally, though, that indicates
nationally? The New York Times, the Washington Post have had big articles about it. I think the internet paper Politico has a big story about it today. CBS News, I saw a report on a few weeks ago. This failure at the Education Department has really messed up all sorts of college applications from kids who need federal student aid to get into college. And nobody in Connecticut is reporting about this disaster that really is lying at the feet of Secretary Cardona. I think, mostly I get the impression that he spends most of his time issuing statements about the need to spend more in the name of education and always tweeting pandering statements to the teacher unions. And, you know, here's a, you know, basic work of, technology that the Education Department was supposed to take care of, had plenty of time to handle, and botched completely. But, you know, nobody in Connecticut is making any reference to it. At least nobody in journalism in Connecticut is.
But I have read national stories on it, and you're right, there isn't coverage locally. But I haven't seen in the national coverage any investigation into what the heck happened, or any, you know, inside dirt on how it's possible to not be able to write an application and get it out in a timely manner, and taking an extra year to get it done, and having it be a major screw up. Like, how is it possible to be that incompetent? You're supposed to mostly just be able to ask people to do things, and it just happens.
Well, it didn't happen in the Education Department. I'm not sure that the federal government generally is terribly competent with these things. I wasn't there a similar screw-up with the national internet site that was being set up for Obamacare. So, you know, the feds are not necessarily any more competent than we are. But look, this is a big national scandal, and the guy who is the local hero, Miguel Cardona, is at the center of it, and it's just being ignored here because it's, I think, contrary to the politics of the people who run journalism in Connecticut.
Which, I guess, kind of hooks up with your, you have sort of a two-part story, which you like to do, where you, you do short stories, and that's kind of fun. So journalism, where did it go? And you track where it went by looking at people who left journalism to go into government. And it occurred to me, you go through all these people who were, I guess, good, devoted, left-leaning reporters, and as a result, they got jobs inside of government, and then you're left in the journalism business, and I'm thinking, I wonder if that's because you tell the truth.
Well, it could be that. It could be I'm not competent. It could be that I'm a loathsome character, personally. It could be that.
All right, it's a multiple choice question.
Offer me a job, yeah. A friend of mine really prompted me to write this column. He pointed out that there were a lot of people in journalism in Connecticut who recently had changed careers and gone into doing publicity for state government. Now, you know, there's always been a revolving door between politics and journalism. I've always said that journalism was just politics by other means, because journalism in the broadest sense is politics in terms of the selection of all its stories. But he prompted me to look closer at some of the names here. He provided some. I went through the list of state government public information officers, and I found at least a dozen people who used to be news reporters for Connecticut news organizations who in recent years have taken publicity jobs in state government. And I think the big point for me here is I think there are now more former Connecticut journalists doing publicity for state government than there are reporters covering state government at the state capitol. You know, serious journalism is far overwhelmed now in Connecticut by all these former journalists who are doing publicity for state government.
Was it always this way? Because now newspapers don't have, and TV stations are maybe better off, I don't know, but there's not a lot of TV and report, there's not a lot of money in reporting these days, and there is a lot of money in government.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's, you know, part of it. People got to live, you know, being in journalism is almost as impoverishing as being in the priesthood these days. But there's another point here, and that's, I think, the political affinity that most reporters have for liberal, leftist, democratic regimes, of which we are governed, or by which we're governed here in Connecticut. I don't think you would find the Lamont administration, which is perfectly politically correct and leftist in most respects, hiring all these people, former journalists, if it didn't find them politically congenial. I don't think the administration would be giving them these cushy, effectively patronage positions if the administration had been aggravated too much by their critical questions when they were, you know, with the press. Now, you know, that's not a scientific analysis, but, you know, the government is not going to hire people who have made a lot of trouble for the government unless the government wants to, you know, get them out of the position where they were making trouble. But I don't think any of these people on the list today, or few of them anyway, made a lot of trouble or at least aggravated the administration so much to get on their blacklist.
But if reporters are failing to report because they want to pull punches and maintain good relationships and possible job opportunities in government, so they want to be nice to politicians, you would think that their editors and other bosses would be calling them in and saying, hey, we need some hard-hitting stuff, not these puff pieces you're doing. You can't be using us to try out for a job.
You know, some of the people who have taken these state publicity jobs in recent years have been editors as well. So, you know, I'm sympathetic to them as well. You know, being in journalism in Connecticut and even nationally today is a struggle. You know, you got to be prepared to make some sacrifices, not only in terms of your personal relationships, but in terms of your
where you sleep. You might have to sleep in a homeless center.
Well, it hasn't gotten that bad yet, but there's always been this revolving door between journalism and politics. I think what's new here, if there is anything new, is that I think it has speeded up dramatically in Connecticut in the last few years, and I think it does have something to do with the affinity that journalists in Connecticut have almost overwhelmingly for the politics of the current regime.
Is there any, you printed a list in your story. We're talking to Chris Powell, chrispowellcolumn.com. You printed a list of some names of reporters who have disappeared out of the reporting business and have popped up in government. Were there any surprises for you on that list in terms of that they would be shilling for the power structure?
Not really. I mean, I'm certainly, I have a lot of respect for Rick Green, who used to work at the Hartford Current and then was working for Hearst Papers in Connecticut and then at Channel 8. I have to think that his talents are wasted now when he's doing publicity for the state police department. He certainly was very well regarded when he was in news management in Connecticut. But, you know, I'm I'm pretty confident is being paid more working for the state than he was for any of his, you know, previous employers. There's some very good reporters on the list that has gone from journalism into the government, and I'm, you know, I'm not surprised if they're still competent. Well, the state has to, you know, hire somebody, but when you lose from journalism somebody of the caliber of Rick Green and maybe a few others on the list, it's a loss for the public interest.
You also did a column on the Brian North trial and the outcome with that case and the killing that prompted the trial. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought that the evidence was overwhelming in support of the manslaughter charge. I saw the videos of the shooting. To me, it was pretty plain that the trooper shot the mentally ill guy, Mubarak Suleiman, really out of adrenaline after this long chase they'd had on the highway from Norwalk to West Haven. The jury chose to see it otherwise. I mean, the guy who was killed was, you know, sitting in a car that was boxed in by troopers. The car was closed up. The doors were closed. The windows were up. The cops busted one of the windows out. But I could not see, just as the inspector general could not see, any reason why the police had to shoot the guy at that moment. Defense from Trooper North was that, oh, well, he saw that the perpetrator had a knife in his hands in the front seat. Well, yeah, he did, but he wasn't really within reach of anybody. In fact, the trooper he was closest to and presumably would have been most threatening to did not fire his gun at Suleiman. You know, I think the jury here, this is just speculation, but I think the juries always can construe evidence however they want, and I think they very well could have decided they didn't want to ruin this trooper's life and his career on behalf of a guy who was chronically mentally ill for many years and should have been institutionalized by his family long before this incident. In fact, I did have a quote from Suleiman's brother who told the Hartford Courant just after Suleiman was shot that he, the brother, always feared that Mubarak would end his life in just this way, because he was always having so many schizophrenic violent outbursts. The guy should have been hospitalized. His family said that they'd had to call the New Haven police to subdue him and take him to Yale New Haven Hospital at least 10 times. And, you know, the guy was not well, not responsible for himself. Society failed him. The government failed him because we don't do mental hospitals anymore. They're politically incorrect. But you know, the shooting, I was convinced it was not proper, that the inspector general was right. And I just think the jury did not want to ruin the trooper's life for somebody who should have been institutionalized.
So jury nullification.
Yeah, well, it wasn't nullification. They had the right to decide it. The evidence could be construed either way, though I think it was a stretch. I just think if Suleiman had been, you know, an upstanding member of society and not been mentally ill and didn't, you know, have a long record of violent outbursts and still had been shot, then I think they certainly would have convicted the trooper. But because of the illness, you know, bad record of the deceased here, I think they just decided he wasn't worth it. And, you know, that's not how the law is supposed to work, but, you know, juries have discretion.
Chris Powell, thank you, sir. ChrisPowellColumn.com. You can read it all there. Appreciate you being here, sir. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Todd. Bye-bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.